If you're a fan of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, I've got exciting news. I'm hosting a special event for recruitment business owners in London on September 17th and 18th, and I'd love you to join us. If you want to achieve your full potential, you need to surround yourself with the right people. At the Recruitment Coach Live Summit, you'll get to meet some of my podcast guests in person, hang out with us, and share ideas. Some of the folks I've interviewed on the show will either be attending or speaking at the summit. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit. If you've got ambitions to scale your recruitment business, especially if you want to crack the lucrative US market, pay attention because my next guest is an expert at exactly that.
Realizing that it is going to be different. I mean, we went over with the same commission structure with similar like incentives and everything. And actually, it is a different market. We actually changed our commission structure a couple of years ago now, just to be more incentivizing for the guys there. The salaries are very different. So the structure is very different. So it doesn't have to be one size fits all. I think that's probably one of the biggest learns that we've taken away.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by Lisa Walder.
I think as recruiters, we're eternal optimists, obviously. And Sarah and I also were very focused, and we've talked about this in other articles we've done on revenue, like for 5 years. We were like, yeah, just build. Yes. And now it's more about, yeah, great, we're going to build, but we want to build like really profitably. We want to look at like recurring revenue streams. Right. We want to make this a real sustainable business that we can scale together and drive more value.
Lisa is co-founder of 15 West. 15 West specializes in providing recruitment talent to recruitment firms in the United States and the UK.
But the reason we started 15 West was to be client-led in a candidate-led market, which sounds a bit crazy. RecTrack has a reputation for being kind of spray and pray, to be, you know, a bit lowest of the low. And we wanted to be a professional business that delivered to its clients. So we wanted to be advising board members, leaders of businesses on how to scale your recruitment business.
Headquartered in New York and London, 15 West partners with recruitment and executive search firms who are building teams in the United States. In 2024, Lisa and her co-founder Sarah McPhee sold their business to 11 Investments.
The reasons that we were excited about them was because growing a recruitment business is hard work.
Yes.
First of all, we'd been through a pandemic. We'd probably had, of the 5 years that we'd been trading, three of those were, you know, COVID years. Yeah. So, you know, we scaled a business to 17 people. We were, you know, at its peak really successfully. We were a profitable business. We'd never lost money. We'd created like a really good culture and we had some really good people in our business. But in order to take, we wanted more. So we wanted to take the business to the next level.
Leading and scaling a business to exit within 5 years, Lisa and Sarah were the first leaders of a recruitment to recruitment business to achieve this milestone.
All right.
Lisa, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here. It's been a long time coming.
Absolutely. We've been talking, sending text messages.
Absolutely.
For at least a year, probably longer, we were trying to work out.
Yep.
So I'm glad we're finally
face to face.
Absolutely. So, I'd love to hear your story of scaling a global recruitment business. And, you know, you've got offices in the UK and the US, so that's super interesting. Yep. But also your perspective as a RecTrack company, you've got valuable insight in terms of for companies who want to scale, how to attract the best people, which ironically, and recruitment business owners tell me continuously that they struggle to recruit for themselves, right?
Yeah.
And so hence why they need you.
It's a great lead-in. So that is the essence of why 15 West exists. So we were trying to solve a problem for our clients, which is recruitment. You know, the biggest challenge a recruitment company has is hiring, you know, great talent. Yeah. So that's, we launched the business 5 years ago now, 5.5 years ago. We, Sarah and I, my co-founder, Sarah McPhee, we worked together at our previous RecTrack company. I was there for sort of 8 years, looked after Asia, the Middle East, and then launched our business in the USA. Mm-hmm. We decided to set up on our own in December 2019. We got our visas for the US. So that's the first thing we wanted to do was set up a boots on the ground office in the US. So we wanted, a lot of our competitors were doing the US market from London at that time. Mm-hmm. We wanted to be in front of our clients, in front of our candidates, And be in the market that we were recruiting in. So, yeah, we got our visa in December 2019. We were, super excited, jumped on a plane in the February. Sarah was going to relocate to New York and run the business there. We found an office in Bryant Park. We got a lease on a flat and we were like, yep, this is amazing. Sarah relocated in March 2020 and 6 days later we went into lockdown. So that was a great time to be alive.
Wow.
That's another story for another podcast. But the reason we started 15 West was to be client-led in a candidate-led market, which sounds a bit crazy. But we wanted to, RectorEc has a reputation for being kind of spray and pray, mm-hmm. to be, you know, a bit lowest of the low. And we wanted to be a professional business that delivered to its clients. So we wanted to be advising board members, leaders of businesses on how to scale your recruitment business and be really partner with our clients. And actually the COVID story is quite a good one, because we launched this business. We thought we were, you know, we're going to hire 20 people and we were going to be like kings of the recruitment world. And actually COVID made us stop and just go, actually, what do we want to be? And how do we go about it? And it allowed us to get closer to our clients as well, because we were, you know, we really had to add value, because it was very hard to, well, no one was hiring recruiters at that time because everybody was at home. So we really had to partner up with our clients and be proper advisors to our clients. So actually, and it also, as a business owner, it made us focus on actually how are we going to scale our own recruitment business, because we were like, yeah, we'll just run to America and it'll be fine. And actually, it's probably not the best way to do it. It gave us time to, you know, we didn't even have a website in March 2020. We got together the website, the brand. The first hire we made was an operational person.
Okay.
Someone to put together all of our promotional pathways, you know, our brand essence, you know, what we were offering our EVP in the market. We basically just spent 6 months, you know, really getting the foundations of the business sorted. And we set up a thing called The Circle, which was to help recruiters who were at home, like really junior recruiters that might have only just started in recruitment, mm-hmm. who were sitting in apartment blocks in Manhattan with no window, you know, they had windows, but no balcony or no outside space. And they were just sitting there going, what do we do? So we actually partnered with some mentors, some experienced people in the recruitment industry. And we put those people together just on Teams, just so they could give them some advice on what they should be doing if they were on furlough or whatever it might be. So that we just tried to add some value to the industry. So that was really nice. And we did actually, and we got a couple of people jobs through that. So they obviously, some people got made redundant because they'd only been in their jobs for 6 months. Out of that, actually, we placed some really good people. We just put people together and they got jobs. So we were really proud of that. So 15 West, long story short, Sarah went back to New York a year later.
Okay.
And then we started scaling from there. So the first hire we made in the US was an American. And we hired about three people in London that we'd known from before. They're actually recruiters. They weren't, they didn't recruit recruiters, but we hired people that were experienced recruitment consultants. And then we scaled from there.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, December 2019 is an auspicious date. That's when we launched this podcast.
Oh, wow.
And we've now celebrated 250 episodes.
Amazing.
And so at the same time, you guys were launching 15 West and with the plan to go to New York.
Yes.
And as we've heard, you had some
hiccups
along the way. So your business partner, Sarah, ultimately has gone out to the US, and do you have a physical office there?
Yes.
Or?
So we've been in Manhattan for four years now. Well, we've always been there, but we have an office in the financial district now. We were in Midtown, but we moved, and we've got a team out there and a team in London as well.
Fantastic. And are you recruiting throughout the US or? But so, is it mainly for British companies or?
Yes. So the reason, the kind of raison d'etre for 15 West was to initially help UK headquartered businesses scale in America.
Yeah.
So both Sarah and I had been doing that for a number of years previously. I'd worked with the same businesses for probably 10 years now when they'd first started going out to America. We just saw a big gap in the market for somebody that knew exactly, like we'd done it ourselves. We set up an entity in America. So we knew, you know, which lawyers to use, we knew which accountants to use, we knew, you know, which HR provider, you know, all the payroll, everything. So yes. we thought we can add value to the client, but we can also then give opportunities for UK recruiters to relocate into the US. We've done that for our own business on the E2 visa, and also, you know, help businesses scale to their next stage in America. So, you know, we wanted to be placing like more people within less clients, basically, mm-hmm. but we wanted to be helping them in London, in Europe, and in the USA. So we actually did place with a couple of clients in Asia as well, mm-hmm. Because again, we're client led. We're not experts in the Asia market, but the client wanted us to help them. And we said, you know, because they're one of our best clients, we did that. So we wanted to help businesses. A typical example is we started working with a business in the energy sector. I was in their office when we went into lockdown, because we were sitting on site with them. Again, we really wanted to understand how they recruited, what the culture was like. So we actually went into their offices and just sat on a desk.
Well, that's cool.
Carried on our day.
Do you always do that, or?
Not always. Just depends on the client. If we're in partnership with them, because we have different models, retain partnership, so all sorts of things. Depends on the model and how we want to work. But at the time, you know, we were a startup business as well, so it was quite nice to have a desk in an office with 50 people rather than sitting on our own. So it kind of worked both ways. But but we were there the day we went into lockdown, and subsequently we helped them scale from 50 to about 130 people.
Wow.
And we probably did about about 60% of their hiring across Europe, Singapore, London, and New York, and we probably did about 90% of their hiring in the US at that time.
So that's incredible.
Yeah, that was a really good example of how we wanted to just be really ingrained within our client base.
So what's super interesting about that is because you're almost like the role model for your client, because you've done it yourselves for your business, and you know that you have like the roadmap of if you want to expand into America. Right. These are the things that you have to set up, and these are the pitfalls to avoid. And so there's a smoother path for them to follow.
And what you need to think about and when, like it takes a lot of preparation. So it's not just, you know, we're going to phone up a lawyer and get it. You know, there's a lot of stuff you've got to do in terms of creating something that's attractive to the US market, which is maybe different to the UK market. And then getting, you know, are you going to recruit from afar first? Are you going to say, look, we're going to bill $1 million before we go out there, and then we're going to take the team here out there, or are we going to hire a local expert? Or, you know, there's so many different ways you can do it. And we've seen people, you know, do it every which way.
Which is the right way?
Oh, God, I don't have that answer. I think, look, there's both work, to be honest with you. I think we've put in like a managing director for a tech recruitment business in Boston, for example. He was, you know, he was remote. It was actually during COVID time. So he didn't know anyone. He didn't know the DNA of the business. He was just, you know, I think he was at Robert Half, and he moved into this business. They were actually based out of Belfast. And they wanted to be in the US market. So we hired him. He's still there for 5 years later. Built a team. So, you know, they brought him over as soon as they could. They brought him over to Belfast. They kind of, they've been spending a lot of time. Initially, I think if you are going to recruit from the local market, you just need to be really close by for them to adopt the processes and understand what the expectations are. We've just done it again, actually, for a construction recruitment company. And I think they underestimated, you know, it's the communication is quite hard when you're here and the time difference. So actually, they've just been out there for like 2 weeks and just sat down with this person and just gone, right, this is how we are, you know. So there's just different ways of doing things. I think, you know, the ideal is to have one of the founders or one of the most original people in the business go out there.
Yes.
And that's probably where we've seen the most success, I would say. And it depends on what your definition of success is, to be honest with you, because the example I just gave you of the construction recruitment client, they don't want to be 20 people. They just want to be 3 or 4 people, you know, doing some high quality work in the US. But then the client that has sent out one of the original employees, they're a 100-person business now in the UK. They sent out one of their founders, and they are absolutely like, they're incredible. There's about 15, they hired 15 people within a year. They're hiring people from other industries, like they actually did private equity recruitment.
Yeah.
So they took two or three people from the London office, and then they've hired locally, and they're taking, you know, finance recruiters who are billing, I don't know, $300,000 a year, and they're turning them into $1 million billers pretty much within 6 to 9 months because of the market that they're in. So that's been a real success story. And actually the guy that launched the office, he was like, yeah, I'm just going to go for like 9 months. Well, you know, he's going to be there for like 2 years. He loves it. Everybody's making money.
The most, I've interviewed quite a few people on the podcast who have expanded to the States from the UK. And that is the most successful formula I've seen, is that one of the founders or as senior employees been with the business for a while, so they're fully indoctrinated, they have the DNA of the business, you know, ingrained in them, and then they take that successful formula to the US, and then that's the nucleus, and they build out and hire local talent from there, rather than, and so all the systems, processes, the values, the you know, the DNA of the business is transplanted into fertile soil in the US.
Yeah.
Are there any other, so in your blueprint or your playbook for expanding in America, what are some of the other keys to success?
I think realizing that it is going to be different. I mean, we went over with the same commission structure with, you know, similar like incentives and everything, and actually it is a different market, and we actually changed our commission structure a couple of years ago now, just to be more incentivizing for the guys there. The salaries are very different, so the structure is very different, so it doesn't have to be one size fits all. I think that's probably one of the biggest learns that we've taken away. I think as a market, if you're a recruitment company who's maybe recruiting senior level work here, and it's a very different market in the US. It's much more transactional, and by that I mean the clients, it's all about delivery. Like here you might go to a pitch and you'd be like, I've placed, you know, all these CFOs at private equity firms, and you know, this is my track record and this is why you should retain me. In America, they don't really care about that. It's all about, where have you got me a candidate? If you got me a candidate, great. And it's very like, they don't want to meet you face to face, which is strange if you're, because you think it's quite a, you know, open culture and everyone's having meetings all the time. You have to earn that. And by doing that, you have to be delivering basically. So it's just like, you know, if you've got the candidate, great. If not, why would I meet you for a coffee? So it is quite cutthroat.
It's interesting because I've had the opposite experience. So by the way, we have about 80% of our clients are in the States now for some reason. I think maybe it's bigger market or more appetite for investing in your business. But I've noted, and again, like, we have sort of 60 clients. That's still a tiny sliver of the industry, right? So it's not representative necessarily.
Are they UK businesses or the US?
No, they're US. Well, we've got UK businesses in the UK.
Yeah,
we've got US clients over there. And a bit of back and forth. But I've observed anecdotally through my clients that there's more, people are more open, more willing to meet you, more appetite for, you know, there's less barriers to doing business.
I think that's true, but only once you've proven yourself. Maybe it's the English. Maybe they're just like, oh, these English people sending us, you know, trying to get us meetings. Maybe it's just English. The UK businesses have to prove themselves quicker. But once you're in, you're 100% in. And I think, you know, a candidate of mine who relocated from London to New York just said, look, he spent a year emailing his client, like just emailing CVs, made loads of money, probably billed $350,000 from this client. But he was like, they just didn't want to meet me until like one day they were like, actually, do you know what? Let's meet up. And now they're, you know, having dinner, best bud, you know, paying whatever. So I think it's, maybe it's a bit of a generalization, but there's definitely that difference. Like track record doesn't really count for much as long as you've got the candidate.
It does. Like if you're doing retained search, I do think you have a pitch deck and you have to show these are clients we worked with, these are successful placements and all that sort of thing. If they're putting money down, they want to know that you can deliver in
advance.
Yeah,
maybe it's contingent recruitment that's the difference.
So I'd like to circle back to compensation. What are some of the other big differences? Because you have offices in both countries, so you're in a unique position to know What are some of the surprises if a UK recruiter is going over to the States? What are some other things that are different?
How people are paid, compensation, obviously healthcare is the biggest one.
Yes.
I mean, obviously everyone knows about this, but it is a huge cost to your P&L. So you have to get that right. And it is expected. I think the pension contributions, 401k, a lot of our clients, you know, you have to be a certain size to, well, yeah, I think you have to be a certain size. I'm not an ops person, but it's to get a 401k, and a lot of companies don't do that, and they put it to the side and they're like, yeah, we'll get it at some point. But it, you know, candidates do really rate that. And you have to obviously do a match and all of that. So that's quite different to the UK. It's not just automatic state pension. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you have to offer that as a benefit. I think that's probably the biggest difference is the benefits.
Okay.
I think the for a recruitment company looking to hire recruiters, the difference is there's not a plethora of 360 recruitment consultants mm-hmm. in the US. The US model is obviously quite split. It's
yeah.
delivery and business development. So mm-hmm. to find a 360 recruiter is the challenge. That's the biggest challenge that we face. You know, we speak to a lot of good recruiters, but they've not brought in their own clients. So all of our clients are looking for that nirvana of a 360 recruiter that's done both sides of the coin. So yes. done business development and delivery. So that's a huge difference. And I think that's probably outside of the benefits and the nuts and bolts, I think in terms of hiring people, I think that's the challenge is finding those good 360 recruiters.
They're harder to find. It's a harder
to move.
Harder to move. It's a harder skills. Like, it's a lot, right? It's hard to do a 360 job.
It is.
Let's talk about money then, since that's one of the big differences is, so first of all, this idea of salary versus draw, what's your policy on that? What do you tell your clients they need to do?
Yeah. So again, this is another challenge. I literally got off a call this afternoon about, which is American staffing firms will offer their candidates a much higher percentage take home.
Do you mean their recruiters? They offer the recruiters a higher percentage?
Yes, of the billings.
Of the billings, yeah.
We could be up to 60, 65% of what they bill, they take home.
Yeah.
But they might be only on commission only.
Yeah.
Which allows them to do that. Or they might be on a very low draw. So it might be, you know, someone that we would place on $150,000 might be on an $80,000 draw, but they're taking home 60-65% sometimes of what they bill.
Yes.
That's the biggest challenge is kind of convincing people. And I still don't really have the answer. I think the key to hiring people and you know, extracting them from those type of businesses is finding the person that wants that security. You know, you can't compete. You can't, like a UK headquartered business can't start us offering their employees 65% draw, 65% take home, because that's not how we're set up as, you know, as recruitment businesses. So it is a challenge, and I still don't have the answer, but you just, you know, companies that offer a really good base salary, really good percentage draw, and I would say that would probably be up to 50-55% at the top end, mm-hmm. but you have to be billing over a certain amount so yeah. And that's probably around the I would say sort of 750 a year mark and okay. more. I think that is attractive to American recruiters, but I think that the sell for UK businesses is that they offer value creation opportunities over and above the base salary, because if you can't compete with the US firms, then what else are we offering? Mm. And that's what do we advise our clients. So we see a lot of LTIP schemes, mm-hmm. Which can be really incentivizing.
Long-term incentive
plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, so you have different pots of, money that you can earn. So it's base bonus, but then you can have the management override if you're managing a team. And on top of all of that, we are offering, most of our clients are offering LTIPs, which is over a 3-year period. If you do X, you know, you'll get a pot of money, which could, you know, significant could be, you know, one we're doing at the moment is if you build a, you know, a 10 million revenue business, you'll get 10% of that on an an event. It doesn't, yeah, it doesn't have to be a sale of the business, but it mm-hmm. could be like an investment from a private equity firm. So I think that's what's attractive to American recruiters who might not ever be able to get, because if they're in a big corporate, you're never going to be able to, you know, get a slice of the pie. But if you go to a boutique firm, like a UK headquarter businesses, then yeah, that's kind of how you can attract the top A players from US recruitment firms. But the percentage draw thing is a real challenge.
It is a big one. Because like UK recruiting firms, often the commission's like 10%, 20%, maybe 35%, that sort of, you know, and whereas in the US it's double that.
Yeah.
And so do your clients who have offices here and there, do they end up having to have totally different comp plans for the States, or how do they negotiate that?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And they have them different comp plans per office as well, actually.
Okay.
So occasionally we've seen it. So if depending on the cost of living and the salaries, you know, if we have thresholds, they might be slightly different depending on what location you're in the US. So mm-hmm. yeah, like I think I said at the beginning, it's not a one size fits all. You literally have to work it out. And, you know, we spend a lot of time with our clients, taking their competitors, looking at their commission schemes, looking at their comp models, and just, you know, creating something for them that we think is competitive in the market that people will buy into. Mm-hmm. Often, the first 12 months, our clients will have to be, you know, they'll have to do something out of the box, have to do something bespoke for that person coming over. That happens all the time in recruitment, obviously, because mm-hmm. people are waiting for commission and you have to guarantee elements. But we do see probably bigger guarantees, mm-hmm. like longer periods of no threshold in the US for people to, you know, in their first 12 months, just to make it attractive for somebody to walk away from what they're looking at the time.
This is a challenge. So like a lot of our clients are small businesses and, you know, trying to grow. And, you know, so especially if you're, let's say, based in a major market, like you're in New York or San Francisco or Dallas or something like that, versus, so we have a client in Boise, Idaho. They can recruit really low base salary, you know, people, and it's not a problem. But in those major markets, getting someone, even with little experience, the expectation, even on the base, and then, you know, is almost like, we're not going to make money on this person, like, except maybe year two, year three.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for the smaller businesses who want to attract talent, but, you know, the expectation in terms of comp is just ridiculous?
It is hard to compete. Mm. I think you have to. So again, I had this conversation with somebody today. They're on 55% total comp. My client's offering 40 up to a certain level, and then 50 if you're hitting it out of the park.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I don't really know what to do. I'm like, but the reason you would go to this boutique firm is because they are specialists in what they do. Mm-hmm. You are leveraging your global network. So actually being a global player in the US is really important. You know, leveraging the UK, you know, offering, they're going to have the opportunity to leverage clients from the UK. Mm-hmm. And if you're billing, like in his case, $400,000, you would only join this business if you think you can bill $800,000. So you're earning 50% of a bigger number.
Got it. It makes sense. So what you're saying in effect is you need to show them how they're going to be better off with you than they are currently. So,
and if it's not going to be on a percentage basis, it has to be on an absolute basis.
Yeah. So we're going to make you more successful. You're going to earn more overall, even though the percentage is less.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
And then there's other things, you know, tech platforms. You know, we're super tech enabled. You know, we're going to make your life easier. It's going to be easier to earn your $500,000, your $600,000 because of these reasons. So having that to share with people, I think there's a lot of, you know, we have a client that we've just started working with who has an amazing like recurring revenue offering, which is it's very bespoke to them, and it's just none of our other clients are doing it. It's just having something that you can go, this is incredible. They're making $50,000 a month just by introducing people for a coffee. Like it's not even a recruitment process. So there's just a lot of if you can find something that differentiates you in the market, then it's happy days.
I think that is the name of the game, isn't it? Is how do you present what you have, or make sure that what you're offering is different and special. What's special about working? Why should someone quit their job and come work for you? That's a question we always ask our clients, right? When we're recruiting for them, and you need to have that answer to that question.
And that's what that whole preparation piece before you go, the EVP, what are we offering somebody?
Yeah.
Whether it's unlimited holiday, even, American firms only offer short amount of holidays. Yeah. So there's lots of levers you can pull that isn't just necessary. This is, the percentage of commission.
Let's talk about that then, because if you're advising a recruitment company that wants to scale and attract really good people, what are the elements that you think make up a really attractive offering apart from just the money side of things?
We've just done this actually in a document that we share with our clients. I was in Austin and Miami and we were talking about how to make this very thing. But it would be the holiday is a big one.
Yeah.
Like wellness allowances, obviously that's really important anywhere in the world. So like gym memberships and those sort of things, having, good incentives, the obvious ones, but the lunch clubs, the opportunities for trips, abroad. And mm-hmm. And I think that is really exciting. Like we've hired Americans who we've offered to come over to the UK and mm-hmm. spend 3 months in the London office. Like they are USPs that people are like, oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So it is important. It doesn't cost you too much money. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, giving that global mobility to people is attractive in the market. Other than that, it would just be the pension piece, the 401k that I've mentioned, and just a great office environment. I think office location is quite important, especially if we're just talking about Manhattan. I mean, we'll talk about other locations. I think I mentioned at the beginning, we don't just recruit in New York. We've recruited pretty much across the USA. But I think it's different by location, actually. Let's actually go with that, because like in Houston or in Austin, mm-hmm. we've lost candidates because we wouldn't pay for, like the client wouldn't pay for their parking, for example.
Right.
So different things are important to different people.
Sure.
Different locations.
Yes.
And who knew that parking was such a big thing in these big cities. So I would definitely, in New York, we offer, companies offer travel allowances and commuter benefits. And
yes.
So it's just putting it all together for the location that you're in and knowing what drives people within those locations, basically.
That makes a lot of sense. I do think what you said earlier, though, about having a game plan that's going to allow them to increase their earnings overall, like how specifically are you going to do that? What can you show them? Is it learning and development? Is it the tech stack? Is it they get... So we have a couple of clients that have like team members in the Philippines to support their billers so that they can do more of the revenue generating work, for example. So like what, I think there has to be something tangible there, not, like showing them how we're going to make them more successful. What have you seen?
Yeah, I think the offshoring delivery function is a really big one. We think South Africa is a massive growth area. I mean, we're also looking at it for ourselves. But a lot of the big corporates have been doing it for quite a while, but most of our clients are now looking, because of the cost of hiring someone in America is so high,
yes.
in particular, having that delivery piece outsourced is a big one. So yeah, we can say, look, come in, you'll have candidate generation, mm-hmm. All you have to do is speak to them, qualify them. That's amazing. Other things that, tech stack is important. Having obviously what's it called? Like, you know, all the Cognizant and Zoom Info, like all the ways to find
data
phone numbers,
sources, yeah.
data sources, like those things are expensive, but obviously are a given. LinkedIn Recruiter, like that obviously is a given. But yeah, I think what else? I can't think of other things necessarily that's out of the ordinary. Just to make them successful. I think it's having a message. Like one of the most successful businesses that we've worked with, again, is go back to the beginning, is the energy and sustainability recruitment firm. And, you know, you're recruiting in a market that people are passionate about. And I think that's, you know, very, very important when you're coming to work every day. Mm-hmm. And that will suit certain people and not suit other people. But I think having a USP in terms of like like the narrative of the roles, we're making a difference to the world. There's a lot of that, especially in life sciences as well. And just having that, you know, having a really niche market that you're recruiting in that you can become experts in and people can feel proud of. I think that's something that's underrated.
That was really well said, Lisa. That's brilliant. I agree. I think more and more that's important to people, especially younger people where, okay, yes, I want to make money. I also want to do something that I think is meaningful and is positive, like creating positive impact on the world, and so I can feel proud of what I'm doing. I do think that's key. You also mentioned like having USPs. Like I do think that doesn't cost anything. If you as a business, it's only going to benefit your business anyway, right? If you have clear, tangible differentiators. Yeah. That's going to mean you win more clients, but also makes it easier for people to be successful in your firm.
I think so. Yeah.
So actually showing people how you really have those clear, tangible differentiators, that's going to make it easier for them to be successful. There was something else you said a second ago, which was, the fact if you're a niche specialist, for example, so you could... bring someone in, and if this is a growth area or it's a niche that has a lot of potential or that this firm maybe has a really good brand in, right? And so I think something we haven't talked about, but if the firm is committed to marketing, content marketing, you know, that type of thing, thought leadership,
that is a big
does
one.
Make it easier for the salespeople, right?
It definitely does. Well. Yeah, I think an important, marketing is a huge one, actually, to get your brand, your personal brand out there, your company brand. Like, it's just so much easier to, you know, sell to somebody if they know who you are already, for example, and you've got that presence on LinkedIn and everything like that. And within your niche, I think we recruited for a business that set up in the US, and they were a tech recruiter, but their client base, they would only work with socially responsible businesses. So So they wouldn't work with a gaming company, for example, or a gambling company. They would, everything, it had to be a force for good. And that was their USP.
Yeah.
So, and that's like super attractive. And
for sure.
So I think having that message and that amplified and, you know, having it being a B Corp, that's a massive one at the moment in America. In fact, globally, having that accreditation, I think there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through to get your B Corp accreditation. But that is important to people. The social enterprise side of things, you know, having some sort of social enterprise strategy just in terms of giving back and, you know, charity work. And, you know, it is important to people.
Well, that's probably a good segue then to talk about 11 Investments.
Yes.
Because you guys were recently acquired by 11 Investments. Tell me that story.
Yeah, so it's a long story, but I won't bore you with all the details. So we were approached... back in, what have been, July 2023, by Joe Curtis, who is one of the founders of 11 Investments.
Yeah.
And 11 Investments are an incubator for recruitment firms. The three founders worked together at Michael Page way back when. They launched a business 8 or 9 years ago now called ThreeSearch, which is a marketing and digital recruitment firm. And that they grew that business to 50 people very successfully. And then they started investing in individuals to launch recruitment brands. So that's their USP. Mm-hmm. And they've created an infrastructure where everybody sort of slots into the back office. So marketing, like we've talked about, marketing, L&D, HR, talent acquisition, that's all a central function for them. And yeah, Joe phoned us and said, look, we're interested in having a rec and we would like to speak to you and we only want to work with you guys. We'd spoken to them once or twice in the past. I think we paced one person with them in the past. I think we were their only external rec spend that year, which was good. They do all their internal hiring through their talent acquisition team. And so we weren't expecting it. We kind of just had a chat and really got on. And then we were like, do you know what? Actually, it's a really nice idea, but we're cool. We're just going to crack on. We haven't quite achieved what we want to achieve yet. And then we kind of all went away and said, no worries. And a year later, long story short, we ended up, signing a deal. And we're now part of the 11 investments since July 2024.
Congrats. That's
cool. Thank you. Yeah.
So Joe Curtis has been on the podcast before.
Yeah, you told me.
Maybe that's how, I'm not sure how we were introduced on LinkedIn, but maybe it was Joe. But in any case, it is a really cool business model that they've got. And they are a B Corp as well, I think. Is that right?
Yeah. But we cheated. We inherited it.
Oh, fantastic. That's cool.
Yeah.
And so Joe was very passionate about that when he was on the show. He was talking about all the hoops you have to jump through, but what the motivation was to do it and so on. So how is this been a win-win, like this acquisition? Yeah. I mean, I guess it makes sense for them because then they've got a built-in rec-to-rec to fuel further expansion.
So yeah, I think what the reasons that we were excited about them was because Sarah and I, growing a recruitment business is hard work.
Yes.
First of all, we'd been through a pandemic. We'd probably had, of the 5 years that we'd been trading, three of those were, COVID years. Yeah. So, and Sarah and I had, we scaled a business to 17 people. We were, at its peak, really successfully. We were a profitable business. We'd never lost money. And we'd created like a really good culture and we had some really good people in our business, but in order to take, we wanted more. So we wanted to take the business to the next level. Sarah and I work so well together, but we also think very similarly. Mm-hmm. And it's great having a co-founder. And that's another whole nother podcast is, I think starting a recruitment business with a co-founder is like the secret sauce as well. Mm-hmm. But so we'd done well over 5 years, but we wanted to take it to the next level. We were looking for a non-exec to come in and advise us because we'd never, we were kind of good at recruiting, but we'd never run a recruitment business before. So we wanted to be better. We wanted to help train our people better. We'd never had any internal L&D. We'd never done any marketing. We'd never done anything like that. So it'd all been organic. And we got to a stage where we're like, look, we want to do better for our employees. So we were going to have to hire marketing. We were going to have to get a new CRM. We were going to have to, start spending money on L&D and hiring more people. And so we were like, actually, we could do it on our own. But I think it would be more fun. And these guys seem to know what they're doing.
Absolutely.
So, let's do it together. And this was the first business that they've actually acquired. Everything else had been organically grown. It's been 7 months now. We've been part of the business, which has been amazing. It's been a massive learning curve for all of us. I'm sure Joe won't mind me saying that. I think everyone underestimates, we're like, amazing. We've done this. We're part of 11 investments. We got into their offices. Then the kind of the real work starts because you have to integrate two big businesses basically. So it's been a lot of learns over the last 7 months. But the reason I think they were interested in us as well, obviously, is because of the US option.
Yeah, of course.
So they wanted to take 3Search into the US. Mm-hmm. We were there. We'd done it. We'd learned all the mistakes. And it was a really great way. This wasn't the only reason, but it was a really good way of them entering into the US market. So they are now, we obviously came into their office in London and they're in our office in New York. So
that's cool.
And it's great for our guys to have, because when you're, again, this is another learn is like, creating a culture remotely when your half your business is in one country and half is in the other, it's really hard work. So actually having a few more people obviously helps. And, you know, we culturally, we all get on really well. And we think, yeah, we thought it would be, it's all gone really well since then.
You obviously are, this wasn't an exit where you sail away in the sunset. No, you're still
very
involved in the business. What's that like as a founder and entrepreneur? And then you do the transaction, but then you like, that's not the end of the story. That's the beginning of a new chapter. So
And a lot of people talk about this. It's a bit of an anti-climax, to be honest with you. Like, yay, we've achieved what we were going to do. And I think we are the first direct company that's had an event.
Cool.
You know, it's what we wanted to do. But then you kind of turn up on the Monday morning and it's like, oh, cool, we've just got to place recruiters
back
still
to work,
and
yeah.
back to work and we're just doing the same thing. So it's interesting. And I think, we just cracked on, really. We've just got our heads down. We're still working with the same clients. We're not there to actually recruit for any of the 11 investments companies. They have their own talent acquisition function.
Gotcha.
What we can do is take opportunities to them in terms of people to invest in.
That's
an interesting angle. I think from an entrepreneur point of view, like it's an adjustment because Sarah and I are just very much used to like, yeah, let's do this, let's do that. And then suddenly we've got a third person in the marriage, basically.
Yes.
So it is an interesting dynamic and we've got to think, oh yeah. This is exactly why we did it, so that we can make better decisions and we can grow. And we've learned a huge amount. And it is just, you know, our way is not always the best way, even though I hate to say it. And I think we are a better business because of it. And we have that third voice. We're lucky we've got three founders in 11 investments that we can, you know, ask for advice on situations, get feedback on us as well, which is always really helpful. Andy Sellers is very much focused on the US growth for 11 investments. So, you know, our US team have, you know, another voice as well over there. So yeah, it's, you know, it's super early on. I think people underestimate, like I said at the beginning, you know, how long it takes to integrate into a business. So I think it will be like a 12-month kind of process, and then when we all know what everybody's doing, and then we'll see the benefits. But like you say, we plugged into their marketing, you know, we've got cool videos now and all the stuff that we'd never had before, so hopefully that's increasing everybody's personal brand.
Absolutely.
Their tech stack is incredible. That has been really, really transformational. They have an amazing L&D function. So Alex Gilbert, who's their guru, he's just been insane. And we've learned so much, just basic things on LinkedIn and, you know, stuff that I've been doing this for 13 years and I was just like, my mind is blown by some of these things I never knew. It's
That's
just incredible.
Cool.
So yeah, it's been really, really good, really positive.
What have been some of the aha moments of things you've learned by being part of a bigger business with access to advisors who like are further along in the journey?
Some of the aha moments. Good question. I think like probably being really aware of the profitability of the business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And profitability of our consultants and like what the drivers of value really are. That's been really interesting. Things that we thought were giving us return on investment may not have been giving us return on investment, and maybe making decisions about where we spend money, what we do, what's going to give us our return has been a real learning curve, I think.
Absolutely. I think that issue around profitability and having visibility on that and for the business as well as per consultant, absolutely.
I think as recruiters, we're eternal optimists, obviously. And Sarah and I also were very focused, and we talked about this in other articles we've done on revenue, like for 5 years. We were like, yeah, just build.
Yes.
And now it's more about, yeah, great, we're going to build, but we want to build like really profitably. We want to look at like recurring revenue streams.
Right.
We want to make this a real sustainable business that we can scale together.
Yes.
And drive more value for an exit, and that ultimately is what we're there for, because we yeah, we wanted to, we could have carried on. We could have, you know, for the next 5 years as we were. Mm-hmm. We wanted to scale some more. We wanted to maybe do like sell the business to our employees or, mm-hmm. you know, do some sort of transaction. But I think being part of a bigger business, you've got more opportunities, I think, to do that, whether that's private equity, whether it's, trade sales or whatever it might be. And I think just having access to those conversations, again, with, cause obviously Joe and the team are very well connected. And yeah, it's been a real, I think it's just been a real eye-opener how to run a bigger business. We've just slotted into like an 80-person sales floor, when there's just 10 of us at the moment. So
yeah, brilliant. So I guess the whole thing, the energy, the momentum, everything accelerates and maybe you can get to where you wanted to be faster and have more fun.
I think that's the thing. I think we could have done it on our own, but I think we'd have had more fun. We will have more fun doing it together.
Awesome. Well, look, hopefully there's the first conversation of many, and good luck with your ongoing growth with 11 Investments. Exciting.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for being on the show.
No worries.